Okay, Ephesians chapter 6, beginning in verse 10. Back when I was in police work, I was one of those few fortunate guys that had access to a bulletproof vest. Back then, they weren't issued to everyone. If you wanted one, you had to get your own. And I was fortunate enough that we had a friend of our family's that actually bought one for me. And so I had one. And I tell you, back then, I don't know how they are now, but those things were uncomfortable as could be to wear. They're heavy. They were bulky. It's basically, I don't know how many layers of Kevlar, thin layers of Kevlar just piled on top of one another. In the summertime, that thing was hot as could be. You're riding around in a car, of course, and that thing's just kind of bunching up on you because it's, you know, going from here, you know. And so they were not the most comfortable things to wear. And when police departments started issuing them, there were a lot of guys who, because they were uncomfortable, refused to wear them. They would put them in their trunk of their car, and I actually heard some officers talking to them. One of them said, if I need it, I'll get it out and put it on. Okay. It's like, okay, the average firefighting police officer gets involved, it lasts 7 seconds. Okay? So you can just picture the scenario of walking up to a car and the guy pulls a gun and you go, well, wait a minute, time out, let me go get my vest and put my vest on before we start shooting at one another. Yeah, it sounds kind of ridiculous, isn't it? That's as ridiculous as the idea of keeping your bulletproof vest in your car, in your trunk, and going to put it on if you need it. Okay. I had one occasion where I, because I would just absolutely would not go out to work without it on. And those were the kind that you wore under your uniform shirt. Okay, they weren't the out the exterior ones. And I had one occasion where I had been working. I worked a day shift, and then I had to stay out in the evening for an inspection meeting that we had. And on my way home, I got you know, just literally around the corner, I mean like from here to Brother's Pizza from the house, and I ran up on an accident, and so I had to work the accident. And while when I was about finished working the accident, dispatch called for all units available. They had a riot out at the prison in Powhatan. And if you were out there, you were available, okay? So I called dispatch and told them I'd be en route. But I was so close to the house that I've been working literally all day, and this was like, you know, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night. And I came home and went in and told Cindy, I said, I'm going to change clothes real quick. And I said, I've got to go. There's a riot at the prison. I have no idea when I'll be back. I don't know if she remembers me telling her all that or not. But I changed my clothes real quick, and I didn't put my vest on. And I started going and went, something just didn't feel right. Wait a minute, I don't have my vest on. So I went back and got my vest and put it on, and then I went to the prison. Here's my point in all of that. Armor doesn't do us a whole lot of good if we don't wear it, we don't use it. Okay. Sometimes that armor can be uncomfortable as could be. There are times when, and we're going to look at these different pieces of armor, there are times when, some of those things just are uncomfortable to have to apply right now. We have to make a choice. Are we going to wear it? Are we going to use it? Or are we going to choose to be comfortable? Are we going to choose the easiest way and so forth and then not be protected? But here's the other thing. Do you wear that armor and use it so much that it just becomes a part of you. So that if you were to go out and not have it, you would automatically recognize, wait a minute, I don't have my armor. Or do you not ever wear it, so going out without it is not anything that you really recognize. Those are the things I want you to think about while we look at this armor that God has provided to us. Okay? The enemy is real. Just because we can't see him doesn't mean he's not there and he's not fighting against us. We've got to keep that in mind. If we don't recognize and understand the nature of our enemy, we will lose the battle and the war. And the reason for that is because we will not take him seriously, and thus we will not depend upon God and his power to help us to be victorious. Look at what Paul says about the nature of the enemy. Verse 12. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. First of all, before we talk about any armor or whatever, we need to understand the nature of the enemy. And the enemy is a spiritual enemy. He is not a physical enemy. This is not an enemy that we can defeat by using bombs and guns and all of those kinds of things. Okay? The other thing we have to understand is that Satan, because he is a spiritual being, is not limited in power like you and I are. We have physical limitations that Satan does not have. And so, mano y mano, okay, one on one, Satan is more powerful than we are. And we have got to understand that. So if we try to fight against Satan on our own, we're going to lose. But the great news is, when we fight against Satan with God on our side using his power, we cannot lose. Because as powerful as Satan is over us, God is even that much more powerful than Satan is. And we cannot lose when we hold fast to God and we use what he has given to us to fight against Satan. Satan cannot defeat God. That's one of the most important things you have to understand. Satan cannot defeat God. He learned that in the initial battle, in the initial warfare in heaven, when he tried to overthrow God. Okay? So what Satan does now in trying, because he can't defeat God, he's trying to hurt God as much as he can. And the way that he can do that is by gaining as much of God's creation, that's us, as he possibly can. Okay? That's what the spiritual warfare is all about. It's Satan trying to destroy as much of God's creation as he can. All right? So we need to understand the nature of the warfare. It is spiritual in nature. All right? It is not physical. And the enemy, we have to understand the nature of our enemy. That enemy is spiritual. He is not physical. Okay? So, having said all of that, we need to understand the benefits of what God has provided to us so that we can be victorious in that spiritual warfare. So, go back to verse 10, where Paul says, finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might, or some of your translations say, in his mighty power. Okay? Be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Now, whose mighty power or strength of might are we to be strong in? His. okay? Not ours. And brethren, that is a lesson we have got to learn, because I'm afraid too many times what we try to do is we try to fight the battles on our own. Mm-hmm. Chuck?
Do we possess any spiritual power apart from God?
No.
I mean, none.
No, not none at all.
Any fight that we have against Satan is going to be by his power.
Exactly. That's why I said earlier, if we try to go up against Satan on our own, we're going to lose every time, because we have no spiritual power. Notice that Paul starts out here talking about not our power, but God's power. And it's not just a power, but it is what kind of power? It is a mighty power. Okay? It is God's mighty power. He says, be strong in that. So we've got to understand that it's God's power that we are using to fight this battle, not our own. Okay? And that's where we find our strength, is in the power of God. Okay? Our weakness, in order for us to really understand this, we've got to understand where our weakness really is. Okay? The Apostle Paul says, when he talks about being strong, he says, what? When I am weak, then I am strong. Why? Because I understand that without him, I'm nothing. And I recognize and acknowledge my weakness. And it's only then can I become strong. See? Because I'm getting myself out of the way and I'm relying on God and his mighty power, not on my own. So I have got to, I've got to understand and recognize and acknowledge my weakness. One of the things that is a picture that the Bible shares with us throughout, I mean, you go all the way back to the Garden of Eden. Okay, it is God's provision. Okay, and what does that mean? You think about God's provision and the way the Bible talks about it. What does that really mean? Do what?
He provides what we need.
He provides what we need, but not only that, he wants us to understand that without him we have nothing. That we have got to rely on him. God wants us to come to that point where we recognize and acknowledge we need him. Thus causing us to rely upon him. I think one of the places where most people lose in spiritual warfare is they don't rely on God. They don't recognize that they need him. We've got to do that. Because without that, what we're telling God is, hey, I can handle this on my own. And the reality is, we can't even breathe on our own. Our very life depends upon God. We've got to acknowledge that. That's what God wants from us, is for us to recognize that we need him. Because that then draws us to him. Right? Okay, so we need to be strong in his power, not our own. Then verse 11, he says, put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. Okay? Why do you think that Paul here says, put on the whole armor of God? What's the significance of that?
Satan's going to look for your weak point.
Okay.
And if you're not shielded completely, he's going to get you.
Okay. All right. So he's looking for our vulnerabilities. Is it sufficient to just put on part of the armor?
No.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. You see the soldiers that are, going into battle now. I mean, these guys are covered head to toe in gear and protection stuff and everything else. You know, what would you think about a soldier who went into battle without wearing his helmet? You go, what an idiot. Right? I mean, what are you thinking? And yet, as Christians, we do it all the time. So we need to put on all of the armor, not just the parts that are easy to put on, not just the parts that are comfortable and so on and so forth, but all of it. Okay? Because every piece of this armor is designed and intended for a specific purpose. Ryan? You got to put it all on. Okay? You got to wear it all. Okay. I'll tell you another story real quick. When I was working in the city police department, we actually had to go to the police department before our shift each time, and we had what's called lineup, and where they, you know, the sergeant would go over whatever, you know, information we needed to have for our shift, and they'd have inspection. And, of course, we had to drive our own private vehicles. We didn't have, you know, car take-home cars and so forth. And so, you know, it was change at home and then drive to work kind of a thing. And I got there to shift and sitting there in lineup, or I got there ready to go, and I realized I did not have my service revolver. Like, this is not a good thing. I had my backup weapon, which was just a small little Chief Special 2-inch barrel little thing. And it's like, of course, I can't just drive home and get it. So what did I do? Tucked that little Chief Special down inside my holster, kind of propped it up there a little bit so it would be a little high and so forth, and kind of standing there in inspection with my arm covering it and so forth. And passed the inspection, no problem. And I got with one of the guys that worked in the booking room, so he didn't even wear his gun because they weren't allowed to back in the booking room. And I said, told him what happened. I said, let me use your service revolver for this shift. And so he allowed me to use his service revolver, and fortunately, nobody knew the wiser. Otherwise, I'd have gotten in all kinds of trouble. Missing your sword. Yeah, absolutely. It's easy to, you know, something goes on, you know, like in that time I guess I was probably just in a hurry, you know, to get to work or whatever, and just, you know, didn't even think about it. And so it just shows that, you know, we've got to have all of it. Okay? Every single bit of it. Then he says that you may take your stand or be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. Okay? Does Satan fight fair? Nope, he doesn't. He is a schemer. He's a liar. He's a deceiver. He will do anything and everything he can to win. Okay? Now, what that means is that we have got to be not schemers and liars and deceivers, but we have got to be just as tough. Okay? And what I mean by that is, you know, in my career in police work, when I was, and I keep using this because it's just such great analogies, okay? You know, when I worked in the city police department down in Newport News, Getting into fights was a regular occurrence. If you worked on a Friday or Saturday night in the evening especially, you can count on you're going to get into a fight somewhere during that shift, okay? It was just, you know, bars and those kind of things. When I worked on the state police, I got into 3 fights the whole time I was with the state police. It was just a whole different atmosphere and so forth. But I will tell you this. You get into a fight, especially when I worked on the state police. City police, there were always other officers that were nearby. You know, you can just call in, officer needs help, and within a couple of minutes, somebody would be there. State police, most of the time when I worked at night, I was the only one out there. 32 miles of interstate, there wasn't any backup. And the very first night that I worked night shift out of the academy, I got into a fight with a drunk driver. And I, you know, was flipped the guy over the guardrail out there on the side of Interstate 95, and we're going at it. And I had one handcuff on one hand and trying to get the other one on him, and I had him pinned against the guardrail, all right? And he's praying, and I'm praying, all right? We're both praying. He's saying, Lord, deliver me from the evil man that's trying to subdue me. And I'm going, Lord, just please help me get this other handcuff on this man, you know? And here's my point. You're in that kind of situation. You're out there, and literally your life depends upon what happens. Okay? You fight to win. Okay? You fight to win. I'm not going to lose that fight. I'm going to do whatever it takes to win that fight. You know why? Because I want to go home at the end of my shift. Okay? And that's what it's about. And we need to understand that Satan is not going to fight fair. He's going to fight dirty. He's going to use everything he can. And we have got to be just as tough. If we don't take it seriously, he's going to overwhelm us. Okay? So we have got to fight to win. Otherwise, you're going to lose. Okay?
I love using the analogy of a basketball game.
Okay. Right.
As opposed to the offensive. And I think lots of times as Christians, we find ourselves playing on defensive, always fighting against the enemy, forgetting that the battle's already been won.
Right.
And we should be fighting from the perspective of offensive,
right,
that we've already won the battle. So get out of my way, or my God's bigger than you.
Right.
And almost not to have an attitude, but an attitude of who's greater and knowing it.
Right.
And then going into the battle, we already be victorious.
I agree. We've got
to
be aggressive and fight, yes.
Aggressive.
And in just a minute, we're going to talk about these individual pieces of armor, and we talk about the sword of the Spirit. We're going to talk about the fact that that is both an offensive and a defensive weapon, okay, because we've got to do both. Chuck?
You know, in your example, and probably a lot of people here have never seen a good fight. They've probably never seen in person. Whole different perspective when you're right there.
You're in it, yeah.
And so, a lot of us may be complacent about that. The reality, you go, yeah, it'll never happen to me. And that's where the fences are down. And then again, 7 seconds, how long does it take to lose a life? You know, we have to be on our guard. And again, it's not to be fearful of the world that we're in. It's to be real about it.
Yeah.
It's real. You know the evil that is out there. And that's the one you cannot expect, nor should we, that the devil's going to say, I'm coming to your house tomorrow.
Yeah.
Be ready. That's not going to happen. So we have to be prepared spiritually, mentally, physically. And also, like you were saying, when you have a good police force and you know it, well-trained, teamwork, camaraderie, you know that if there's a certain assurance within you that your buddy's got your back.
Yeah.
You know, and that, so therefore, the fear is not as great knowing that you have a reinforcement behind you.
Right.
How much more so when we know that Jesus is right there with us? We have the greatest support team ever conjured up. We rely on that, know that. But again, we get better with it once we keep working with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Work that, know that, pray about it, be prepared.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. It's coming.
Yeah. You know, something just came to mind as you were talking about that whole idea of, you know, having one another's back and so forth. And as I said earlier, when I worked on the city police department, you know, there was 33 other guys, 33 guys on the shift, so, and they were all over, and we're just in a city, and so there was always somebody nearby. But as a state trooper, as I said earlier, there was nobody out there most of the time. But I tell you what there was out there, and that was the reputation, okay? You know, back then, people knew if you fight with one trooper, you're going to have to deal with the whole department, okay? Because we're relentless about protecting our people, and you might get the best of one, but we will hunt you down and do whatever needs to be. So, you know, people, the reputation was there, and that's why, you know, in all the whole time I was a state trooper, I only got into three fights where in the city it was there all the time. You know, it was a regular occurrence because people don't want to mess with state troopers. Okay, because of the reputation, and that's, you know, that's backup that you have, and so you take that and you look at it and say, what is our reputation as Christians? You say that Satan knows that we're helping one another, we're there for one another, you know, and so forth, and so those things are important. They really, really are. Okay, all right, let's talk about these different pieces of armor here, so we understand. What these things are, okay? Go down and verse 13. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand firm. Stand, therefore, having fastened on what? The first piece of armor. The belt of truth. Okay? Why is a belt of truth so vitally important? That piece of armor. What's so important about a belt of truth?
That's the light.
Okay?
It exposes
what? Evil. What kind of evil specifically?
Lies.
Lies. One of Satan's greatest tools that he uses is lies. He is the father of lies, Jesus says. Okay? And we need that belt of truth so that we can be able to see through the lies that Satan is telling us. How many times have you ever heard Satan, maybe, you know, got a lot of tough stuff going on in your life, how many times have you ever heard Satan saying, you're not any good. God doesn't love you. If God really cared about you, he wouldn't be putting you through this. You ever heard him say anything like that to you? Those are lies that Satan tells us to discourage us and get us to give up. And that's why God gives us a belt of truth so that we can see through those lies and be strong against the lies that Satan will tell us. So we've got to put on that belt of truth, Ryan?
It's funny how the belt of truth is what we attach to all our weapons.
Everything else goes on that. You've got to put the belt on first. Okay? All right? Okay. Then he says, having the breastplate of righteousness. Okay. Breastplate of righteousness. What's a breastplate? Where's it go? That's the bulletproof vest, right? Right here. And what is that covering? The vital organs. Okay. All right. That's where you got the. That's where you need a lot of that protection. Not the most, but that's where most of the vital organs are. So you got to protect this area. You get shot in the arm. It's a flesh wound. I can keep on fighting, right? Okay? But, you know, you get something in the vital organs, that's not a good thing. Okay? That's going to cause you to have a bad day. All right? So he gives us a breastplate of righteousness. What's one of the most important organs that's in this area?
Heart.
Heart. The Apostle Paul even tells us to guard our heart, right? You see? That we need to make sure that we're guarding our heart, that we're taking and protecting our heart. Because if our heart gets corrupted, everything else is lost. Jesus even talks about the fact that it's not what goes into a man that defiles him, but what? It's what comes out, because what comes out comes from the heart. So we've got to protect the heart. What is that?
I just thought of something while you were talking with the shield. That might be right where people look first. Are you living righteously? Is that shield there that shows that you're a soldier of the cross?
Yeah. Well, you know, again, in law enforcement, when you're doing firearms training and, you know, when you have to learn how to shoot and so forth, and the whole philosophy is, you shoot to kill. You don't shoot, you know, the Hollywood stuff of, I'm just going to wing him, you know. No, you are trained to shoot to kill. And where do you aim, Chuck?
Center of mass.
Okay, you have the most likelihood of hitting there than you do kind of wing him on the shoulder or arm or something, okay? Center of mass. Where is Satan going to attack us? Center of mass. Okay? So we need that protection. A breastplate of righteousness. Okay? What is righteousness? And Kathy kind of alluded to this. I don't know if she recognized this a moment ago. What is righteousness?
Doing the right thing.
Okay, doing the right thing. It's basically right living. Do what's right regardless is the best definition I've ever heard of that. Okay? And when that's how we are living, people are going to see that. Okay? People are going to see it. Ryan?
Back in the old days, when their breastplate, the breastplate, they had their emblem on it that they belonged to.
Yeah.
And on our righteousness, when we have that emblem, we'll have that emblem, we belong to God. It can be that we're warriors of God. So that breastplate
actually
has the symbol. And that's what righteousness shows.
Okay. Okay, let's see. Verse 15. Have your shoes for your feet, having put on the readiness given by the gospel of peace. Your shoes fitted with readiness. Some translations say that come from the gospel of peace. What's the symbolism there?
Okay. Peaceful manner, Lord willing, you won't have to battle.
Okay.
But, you know, the evil one will do it again.
Okay.
But you've got to be ready to go.
All right. You've got to be always ready to go. All right. But always standing for peace, taking the gospel of peace. That's what it is. Okay. Trying to make peace with folks where you can. Paul says, as far as is possible with you, be on good terms with all men. Okay? So in other words, as Christians, if we can't get along with someone, it must not be because of us. Okay? Must not be because of us.
You have to say you at least try.
We've got to do everything we can to be at peace. And we use the gospel of peace to do that. This gospel brings peace to God and His creation. And that's why it's referred to as the gospel of peace. And we need to be taking that to as many people as we can. And it's amazing how sometimes when, you know, we're in a situation where, you know, this could get ugly real fast, how we approach it can make all the difference in the world. Okay? I avoided my fourth fight in the state police when I had a truck driver that I stopped, and I think I've told you all this story before, and he came down out of the truck, and he was mad. He was fit to be tied. As I walked up there to the truck, this is right over here on 85, and I walked up to him, and he comes storming down, and I go, oh, this is going to be bad. And he starts fussing at me and everything. What the, are you stopping me now for? And I said, whoa, wait a minute here. I tell you what, I said, I don't know what's going on, but I tell you, you go back and get in your cab, and I'll go back and get in my car, and we'll start this thing all over again. And he kind of looked at me like, and he just started laughing. You know, just, he realized how ridiculous he was being. And so I was able to defuse the situation and said, what's going on here? Why are you so mad about it? He said, I just got a ticket down in North Carolina. Said, well, I hate to take bad news, but you're going to get another one. But here's my point. You see, you know, I recognized something was amiss here and was able to defuse that by, I could have just jumped right in there and, you know, here's fight number four. But you try to deal with it in different ways, and sometimes you can, you know, he took a ticket, he wasn't mad at me anymore, wasn't thinking he was mad at himself. You know, so you're able to, sometimes when you approach it in that way, you can turn those things around. And we need to have that kind of attitude about it. He talks about, in all circumstances, he says, take up the shield of faith. All right, now the shield that you're holding out in front of you is a shield of faith. But notice what he says, how we use this shield. Okay? What do we do with it? With which you can extinguish all the flaming darts of the evil one. Okay? Now, a shield of faith to extinguish the flaming darts of the evil one. Told you earlier, okay? Lies, that's why we need that belt of truth. Another huge area that Satan has been using since the Garden of Eden is doubt. Did God really say? Okay? And Satan will always be hurling, you know, arrows of doubt at us. Because if he can get us to start doubting God, then again, we give up. And so God provides to us this shield of faith, that by faith we stand firm. Okay? Abraham believed God. Remember, we talked about this before. Not believe in, but he believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. How many times in your life have you been faced with something where Satan is trying to get you to doubt, but you know what God's word says? You know what he told you to do. But Satan is saying, did God really say? And you find yourself starting to doubt. Well, will it really matter if nobody knows, or whatever the case may be? You see? It's not really hurting anybody. And all those kinds of ways that we reason. Because Satan has hit us with doubt. God gives us a mechanism to protect ourselves from the doubt that Satan will hurl at us constantly. He knows how to use it. He's good at it. It was the first thing he used against God's creation in the Garden of Eden. Okay? That, along with half-truths. That's why we need the belt and the shield, okay? All right, before we run out of time here. So we have this shield of faith, and then he says, take up the helmet of salvation. All right? Helmet of salvation. Where we wear a helmet? On the head, because that protects the most important vital organ, right? Now, I know, you know, if the brain gets damaged, it gets injured, it dies, okay? If your brain dead, then what happens? You're dead, okay? Now, I know a lot of people who seem to be brain dead, okay, today, all right? But that's not the same thing, okay? But the point here is we need to understand spiritual warfare at its most critical point is all about control of the thinking. Okay? Whoever controls the thinking controls the behavior. All right? Our thinking is what determines what we do. That's why Paul in Romans chapter 12 and verse 2 says, do not conform any longer to the patterns of this world. That's behavior. But be transformed, or change your behavior, by the renewing of your mind. You change your behavior by changing the way you think. Spiritual warfare is about control of our mind. Okay? And so God gives us a helmet to protect our thinking. All right? When we get into what's called stinky thinking, all right, and we've opened the door for Satan to get in there and he can wreak havoc on us. I know because I've been there many times. Okay? And so when I, you know, I find myself, you know, with all these, you know, I realize, I don't have my helmet on. And Satan is messing with my mind. Okay, and then finally, because we're out of time here. And take up the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God, praying at all times in the Spirit with all prayer and supplication. The sword of the Spirit. What does he define that as? God's Word. Okay? The sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. As I mentioned to you earlier, one of the things we've got to understand about, so two things we've got to keep in mind. Number one is, a sword, as I mentioned earlier, is both an offensive and a defensive weapon. Okay? You use it to defend yourself in an attack, but you also use it to do what, Karen? To drive the enemy back. All right? But here's the other thing you've got to understand and remember. In order to become proficient with a sword, you have to practice with it. Okay? If you don't practice with it, you will not know how to use it when the time comes. Jesus showed us how to use it when he was tempted in the wilderness. When over and over again, what did he do? He drew his sword, okay, by saying to Satan, "It is written." Okay? If you don't practice with it, you don't know it well enough that when Satan is attacking you, you can't defend yourself, let alone drive him off, because you don't know it. So don't just leave it sitting on your coffee table or on a shelf, but study it, learn it. Okay? Don't just know what it says, learn it. Chuck, finish this up. We're way over time here.
Well, just like Karen was saying, we can't be on defense all the time. We've all been there where Satan is just barraging us, and we're like, and we got to come to a point where that's enough.
Yeah.
And you have to go on the offensive, and the offensive is to share the gospel. You need a victory. You need to cry out to God for a victory. Yeah. He wants you to have a victory. We all need that victory for encouragement. He'll give it to us. We've all got stories of that too.
Yeah.
He gives us that victory that we need so desperately after taking on such an attack.
Yes.
But we can't stay there.
Yeah. You can't just cower down and...
Wouldn't you get discouraged? And that's your advantage.
Right.
And that last one, pray.
Yes, you've got to pray.
You never leave that one out of your armor.
Before you go into battle, you bring it to the Lord in prayer.
Yeah.
You bring it to Him in prayer. Okay, I'd love to talk about this a whole lot more, but we are way over time. But thank you all very much. All right.